Welcome to the daily VFN Radio Highlights, where we're keeping the conversation light at VFNTV.com. Enjoy. We'll talk about, you know, separation of church and state. And I think this is so important because this is Prager University, and this is one of their classes that they give on separation of church and state. And they're talking about it because we're talking about original intent, the original intent of the nation and the original intent of the church. You know, what do the founding fathers say about it? I think they do an excellent job. And this is on separation of church and state, which they teach at Prager University. It's one of their classes. Listen up.
Almost everyone has heard of the separation of church and state. In fact, this phrase is so central to the discussion of the role of religion in American society that most Americans actually believe it is in the United States Constitution itself. But there is no such phrase in the Constitution, because the founding fathers never intended for church and state to be completely separate. They saw religion as indispensable to the moral foundation of the nation they were creating. So where does that phrase come from? Believe it or not, it comes from one brief letter that Thomas Jefferson wrote in 1802 to the Baptist Association in Danbury, Connecticut. And what exactly does the Constitution say about religion and its role in public life? The answer is found in the First Amendment to the Constitution. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. It's plain what those words mean. The new federal government could not establish a national religion to which everyone had to belong. Each American citizen must be free to choose his own religion. When James Madison first proposed what eventually became the First Amendment, his original wording stated that no religion shall be established by Congress, but that language was subsequently modified after it was pointed out that this might be construed to mean that the state had no interest in religion at all. As George Washington noted in his farewell address, religion and morality are indispensable supports of our political prosperity. And reason and experience both forbid us to expect that national morality can prevail in exclusion of religious principle. Washington's view remained the nation's view for 150 years, but that changed in 1947. In that year, in the case of Everson versus Board of Education, the Supreme Court ruled in a 5-4 decision that under the First Amendment, neither a state nor the federal government could pass laws which aid one religion, aid all religions, or prefer one religion over another. By adding the phrase "aid all religions" in between the ban on preferential treatment, the court laid the groundwork for the modern strict separation of church and state view. And where did the majority 5 justices look for support for their argument? Back to that one phrase used in one letter by Thomas Jefferson. How ironic. The Declaration of Independence, which Jefferson authored, of course, grounded the cause of independence in an appeal to nature and nature's God. It established the proposition that we have inalienable rights that are not bestowed on us by government, but are a birthright gift from our Creator. And it concluded from those self-evident truths that government's only legitimate purpose is to secure every citizen's God-given inalienable rights. Does that sound like something that was written by a man who wanted to wall off government from religious belief? The Declaration of Independence and the Constitution are but two of the innumerable examples where our government, both federal and state, acknowledge a debt to God. As Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas, a noted liberal, acknowledged in the 1952 case of Zorick versus Clausen, we are a religious people whose institutions presuppose a supreme being. But the damage had been done. The separation of church and state metaphor that the court borrowed from Jefferson in the Everson decision has been used to remove God and religion piece by piece from American public life. Are we a better society for it? Marriage, except among religious Americans, is in decline. Birth rates, except among religious Americans, are in decline. The percentage of children born to unwed women has skyrocketed. Behavior in classrooms has deteriorated. Crime rates rose just as religion declined. Almost every cultural and ethical indicator has declined since God and religion started to be removed from American life, and all because of one sentence in one letter. I'm John Eastman, professor at Chapman University School of Law for Prager University.
That is so amazing. You know, you're listening to VFN Radio at VFNTV.com, and understand that we're talking about original intent. What is the original intent when you hear about separation of church and state? Obviously, when he wrote the thing, when the very one that wrote it, they're using one of his letters saying that this is what he meant in the letters. Like, how about just reading the document that he found? You know, because when you start drawing things up, you do a rough draft and a rough draft, and you think it through and think it through. And then eventually you come out with what's more clear, and this is going to be my final product.
Right.
He said God is the epicenter of our existence.
Right.
That our rights come from him. And the very first amendment was, and the government shouldn't mess with it.
Right. That's right.
Hello?
That kind of explains everything, wouldn't you say?
Hello?
And so understand that it's messaging where people are constantly trying to put a message out, like 1947 when they began to do a groundwork with the Everson case, Everson versus the board.
And they just hijacked that phrase off of, they looked for one thing for, you know, to latch onto, and they didn't latch onto the Constitution. It took this one letter, I mean, this one sentence out of the letter, and used that to set precedence.
Mm-hmm. But they're skipping over the actual document itself that he wrote. He said, this is the final one, and everybody signed it, including him, in the context of that. So for 150 years, it was unquestionable that the separation of church and state, which was a statement they came up with themselves, but it basically would be interpreted up to 150 years is government don't touch the church. Don't touch it, because they came from England where King George put himself over the church and made one church and made it integrated it with the government and said, if you leave this church, it's like leaving the country, so you can suffer for the crime of treason.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And so their perspective was they didn't want the government to have anything to do at all with the freedom of religion.
That's right.
And that's what they say, even the gathering and being able to petition the government, that all comes from the freedom. The government is by the people and for the people. Now, the government is trying, this has always happened in history. You know, the government will eventually try to, if it doesn't start off with, see itself as the answer to all. Mm-hmm. I mean, even Israel, when they cried out for a king like everyone else, they were choosing the world's form of government over God's form of government instead of Samuel, who they did have. They weren't satisfied with God's form of government, so they said, we want a king like everybody else. And so God gave them Saul, mm-hmm. the very first king, who led them into a lot of difficulty. And that's where we are today. Today is, we have to understand, despite what's happening, we've got to say, who is God?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Is government God or is God God? And people can say, well, God's God, but if we turn to government as God, that's who truly...
That's right. It's not what you say, is what you follow.
Well, you think about it, people, pay their taxes, but do people give God his tithe?
Mm. Right.
According to George Bona, only 3% of regular church attenders give a tenth of their income increase, and not all of that is to the church in itself. Which means, but it's interesting, probably 100% of them pay their taxes.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And so then who is God? Mm. Well, they force me to. Well, God's not going to force us to, but the fact is that, hey, if he's God, then we're going to honor him.
Yeah.
We're going to honor him. And one way we honor him is we say, God, you've given me all of this. You blessed the work of my hands, so I'm going to honor you with the first fruits and the tithes. Another way we honor him in America is going back to the original intent of the founding fathers, when it was clearly stated in the documents that that all of our rights come from God.
Mm-hmm.
It's signed in the year of our Lord. I mean, we tell time by Jesus.
Yeah.
And but in America is a land of law that it's based on, which we talked about before, let the decision stand. That's why it was so good about this case that happened with
Gosnell.
Yeah, Gosnell, the abortion doctor that Now that decision is going to stand. They can't do anything with it, especially since he just went ahead and said, you know, put me away.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And so now they have to contend with this case. And if you would have fought it and they would have won it, they would have changed that. But they can't. It's just there now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 1947 is what they're saying here with Prager University, one of their classes. You could see this video, which you're hearing kind of sound effects. That makes it pretty interesting
and
when
the decision
he's talking.
Was 5-4, yeah. which tells you how important it is when you – we have judges that really, you know, rule by the law by just looking at the Constitution and not trying to interpret the Constitution. Well, it matters.
And they didn't go to the Constitution. They went to a letter.
Exactly.
I mean, we've all written those letters one time or another, right? And I wish I had wrote that letter.
Right.
And the enemy would go to that lowest common denominator letter and say, this is how you feel. Well, that's how I felt momentarily.
Yeah. Right. I've sent like 1,000 emails in my life. Right, 1,000,
right.
You know, you pick the one sentence in the one email that I said.
Right. But you can just read. I got something encouraging to tell you. When we're talking about original intent, and a lot of people are saying, "No, we're going to lose the country. We're going to lose the country." Well, not necessarily if we just wake up and be who we're supposed to be in God and good Americans in the context of that. How about just reading the document that they're trying to change? Why not read the Declaration of Independence? Why not read the Constitution?
Yes.
And you'll be really surprised. Everything that's being said today. A lot of it that's leading us in this dark direction is the opposite of what the document says. That's why they want to do away with it. But if that's what we're actually based on, that's our Constitution, what we're made up of, and that's the reason why we declared our independence, which is 27 reasons, not just taxation. There was a whole bunch of different reasons, is that you'll find out, wait a minute, me standing up to be a good American and a good Christian fits right in with the... expectations of those who founded this country.
Yeah.
It's not wrong. It actually was an expectation of that. As a matter of fact, the very first Bibles printed in America was printed by the U.S. Congress.
You've just been listening to the highlights from the Daily VFN Radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light. Don't forget to share it with your friends. Find out more and listen to the Daily VFN Radio program in its entirety at VFNTV.com or with your mobile VFN TV app on your mobile phone or device. That's VFNTV.com.